WRKS Pickens.
Are you ready?
Yes!
Now live from the Whiskey 61 Lounge inside the Bank Plus Studio.
You are listening to
Mississippi's number one sports talk show, The Out of Bounds Show with Bo Bounds.
Streaming worldwide live on the Out of Bounds radio app and on your radio
at ESPN 105.9. The Soul.
And good morning, Out of Bounds, 105.9 The Zone ESPN. We're streaming live on the Out of Bounds radio app. Brad Edwards, 25 years at ESPN. Bama grad will stop by at 8:30 as we will do a little state of the state in the SEC now that Georgia has leapfrogged the Alabama Crimson Tide. A little bit different deal for Nick Saban and Roll Tide Nation. As it's a lot easier playing with the lead, right? And now Saban is the hunter. We talked about this last week for 10 years? A little longer, really. About 12 years of Saban's tenure in Tuscaloosa. Florida, Georgia, Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee were pretty darn dysfunctional, right? I mean, I know Georgia would win and go 10-2, sometimes 11 wins. And LSU would jump up there once every 3 years under Miles or Ogeron. But let's just say it, they had Les Miles and Ed Ogeron as their head coaches. Auburn was about every 3 years. And Florida really hasn't been a factor. Dan had one really, really good year. And McElwain and Muschamp just weren't capable. And Tennessee went through, you know, coaches left and right. So, it was a really good path for Saban. LSU wasn't run well. Auburn wasn't run well. Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. Today, Josh Heupel, rolling. Kirby Smart, rolling. Auburn has a legitimate head coach who's going to win. And at times win big. And LSU has an excellent head coach in Brian Kelly. Totally different. You know, it's a lot easier playing with the lead. It is. And Bama was playing. And, hey, credit Saban. He took advantage of everything that I just described. And I don't want to – I'm not going to knock that. He beat the mess out of those. And a lot of those many of those programs named Saban assistants – as head coaches who, I mean, this is lazy ADing, okay, who had no business being head coaches. Derek Dooley, Will Muschamp, you know, there were several others. So anyway, Ed Ogeron, but he wasn't under Saban. I realize that. So the point is, now today, Georgia is better than Bama. Tennessee is operating at a high level. I think Florida's about to be. Auburn is operating at a high level, and LSU's operating at a high level. That also impacts your dogs and rebs. You better sharpen the sword, be as efficient as you can, understand who you are and what you are, because the league is so much better. I don't want to take a shot at Mullen or Freeze. They took advantage of windows of opportunity, but it is much, much, much more difficult than it was in 2014 when we were all partying. And Mississippi State was number one and Ole Miss was number three.
I can't believe you disrespected the number one threat to the Saban dynasty.
We ain't going nowhere.
I just did all that and didn't mention Jimbo Fisher.
It's really despicable.
That's so disrespectful of you.
Should I apologize?
To Jimbo and the 12th man.
Well, it's all about the 12th man.
Yeah. It's not about NIL deals. It's about the 12th man.
You know, he's kind of lost his... we were paying attention to A&M and Jimbo, but Freeze going to Auburn
and Georgia
going back-to-back.
Yeah.
And Brian Kelly, you can tell, already has the thing put back together at LSU.
And Saban,
they're
going to
be well-coached, well-run. You're not going to see the just absolute stupidity that you saw from the LSU sideline during the Les Miles and Ed Ogeron tenure, right?
Correct.
I mean, it's comical. And you're not, Brian Kelly is not going to operate like that.
Correct. And Saban had to rebuild his staff in terms of OCDC. So all of that has consumed the oxygen in the room. A&M's been forgotten. I would argue that's a good thing for Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher.
Maybe. They won't be talked about near as much this year. You're right. People won't be coming off the number one class in the country. Yeah,
people had written them into Atlanta last year.
Yeah. And they went 5-7.
Correct.
That is hard to do.
It's impressive. They lost to Kevin Barbet in App State.
They did. Barbet actually had some good play calls in that second half for them to just manufacture, just because A&M was still good on defense. And
only out-recruits them by about 100 spots.
Right. And Barbet had to get, funky, just like he'll have to do at Mississippi State. I mean, you're at a talent disadvantage. You're going to have to figure some cool wrinkles out. You're right. Barbet was at App State, offensive coordinator, when they beat A&M at A&M, by the way. It's not like that game was in Boone, North Carolina.
Yeah, that was a while. I remember when we all went, what just happened? And then that was just the rest of the year for A&M.
It was.
It was just the beginning. And look, if KJ Jefferson doesn't fumble on the 1 yard line,
that's a bad football
team.
They're
4-8.
I know. I watched it. I was in Starkville, and their defense played really, really well. And what was it, about 4 minutes left to go in the half? Leach and the offense couldn't score either. Nobody could score. And then the dam broke.
Yep.
I mean, it's just one of those things. We've seen it in Oxford and Starkville. You can get three and outs, but eventually you're going to have to score.
The game's designed for teams to score.
Absolutely.
It's not designed for you to pitch shutouts. It just isn't.
And A&M, kept making mistakes on the offensive side of the football, and Mississippi State took advantage of it. So, and Ole Miss went to A&M and won.
Rezdog,
it was a closer game.
Rezdog says you're the only person who cares that Freeze is at Auburn.
Oh, man, it's going to be a rude awakening for Rezdog.
I believe in Auburn and love it. War Eagle.
Golly, that makes me just want to go outside and run around with my just fist pump.
I get chills.
Yeah. I think my toes are tingling.
Yeah.
Live in the Bank Plus studio. AgUp.com text line 601-885-3776. Are you going to go to a Super Bowl party?
I haven't decided if I'm going to watch it at home, if I'm going to go somewhere. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I don't know what the plan is yet. I'm not a big 12 people, 14 people, that's about as much as I'd probably
get. Sounds like 10 too many for
me. That's manageable, though. You don't have to. 14 is not like, you're not going to talk to all the people at the one time anyway.
14 is a lot.
And you're still going to pod off. You're going to have like four here. And
I agree with
here
that.
And six here, whatever.
I guess.
So you're going to have, and it looks like the weather should be okay. So like it's not, I think we'll be okay.
Okay.
So, you can do more with that. I'm definitely not hosting a party. I can tell you that.
Sunday
much.
Looks amazing.
Yeah, I'm not hosting a party.
Sunny with a high of 60.
See, so you can be outside and inside, which is the ideal.
And people can cook like crazy.
To me, that's
on their eggs.
That's the key, is having an outdoor watching party as well as an indoor watching party. You can have the fire pit going. It's just something fun about the Super Bowl being outside.
Yeah, the weather looks really, really good. I think if I do anything, I'll drop by somebody's house well before the game, 3:30, say hey for an hour, come back, get locked in at the house.
Okay. I like it.
If I do that. I'm not committing to anything.
I'm not committing.
but, I did have one buddy reach out. He was kind enough to invite me.
Everyone, text in and invite Bo to your Super Bowl party.
Yeah, invite me to your Super Bowl party.
He'll show up. If you text us right now, he will show up, I guarantee.
Ag Up Equipment text line, 601-885-3776. Man, the weather's going to be great to cook out. I'm excited for all of us that will be able to grill out, smoke stuff and ribs and, oh, man, briskets, all kinds of things. What are people going to cook for us, I think, is the question. Out of Bounds, brought to you by the amazing steaks and Long Branch Bourbon at Kessler Prime in the Renaissance. Do a side of bacon-wrapped shrimp or mushrooms and pair it with a Long Branch Bourbon old-fashioned. Good morning. Welcome in. Chris Jans has won three in a row. Brad Everts, Roll Tide Insider, 8:30.
I have to tell you about this game-changing product I use before a night out with drinks. It's called Z-Biotics. Every time I have a Z-Biotics before I drink, I notice a difference the next day, even after a night out. For example, when we smash steaks and drink bourbon and so on, I do it without worry because of Z-Biotics. You should too. Go to zbiotics.com/OOB to get 15% off your first order when you use OOB at checkout. Zbiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/OOB and use the code OOB at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, Zbiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times. Cheers.
It looks like people are inviting me to their Super Bowl party, which is kind of cool. Come on over. Cream cheese stuffed deer tenderloin wrapped in bacon. Good grief. That sounds good. White Denzel also has lobster mac and cheese, fingerling potatoes, boudin dip, among other things that will make you want to take Monday off. Because you will still be in a food coma.
I'm planning on taking Monday off. National holiday, right?
It is for some people. It isn't for the Out of Bounds show.
Day after the Super Bowl, baby.
And it's not for Chris Jans either. Chris Jans with 3 wins in a row. He is he's kind of the toast of Starkville right now. A lot of people are excited about Zach Arnett. But Jans with 3 dubs, TCU at South Carolina, Missouri at home, and he will host LSU on Wednesday. If he wins that game,
you're booking your first round ticket.
I am not, but things start to get a little more real.
Why are you being so negative?
I'm not.
Jump on the bandwagon.
I think Tolu Smith is playing unbelievable basketball, and they're finding some other pieces. And I can't believe they're winning games. I can't. And that's a credit to Jans. I mean, he had 3 really good dubs before the SEC. And then, of course, the TCU is a good, well, any conference win is good. So we'll see what they decide to do. But Tolu is back playing insane. I mean, he had a wicked, wicked performance over the weekend. And there were some other guys who played. You know, DJ Fine got going on offense, Cam Matthews, and so on. So we'll see how that looks for Mississippi State. Ole Miss will be looking for a coach here, or already are, actually, kind of, you know, off the record. And we'll see. You know, the 2 schools have tons of money, so you can do what Mississippi State did last year, and you can go get a guy from a mid-major who's going to NCAA tournaments like Chris Jans. You kind of beat, you know, you were worried that Florida may go that direction. They decide to go with the San Francisco coach. But kudos to, you know, Cohen and Bo Hemphill. They stayed the course and did what they needed to do. Stevenson's playing well, too, off the bench. When you can get 10 points from him, that is a big deal. And you had foul trouble going on with your guards, and you still won. I thought the officials had lost their... I can't figure out what they were doing in the game. That was a poorly officiated game. But
as much money as in the SEC, how do you not just go ahead and make full-time officials and get rid of this nonsense?
You know, Mizzou had 1 role player with 4 fouls. Mississippi State had 2 starters with 4 fouls in Davis and Moore. And that's the reason why Reed Jr. played
so much. He didn't really, he had 0 points, a couple of assists in 21 minutes. But anyway, you got it done. You beat Missouri. Tolu's on fire, 25-12. Again, he's got to be our wicked performer of the weekend. That or all the amazing play from the Pro Bowl, whichever way you want to go. And that's kind of where we are with SEC hoops. Do you want to call it right now that the national champ will come out of the Southeastern Conference?
For basketball?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
That's betting against the odds.
Okay.
You're sold on Kentucky, which I think is hilarious. You ready to say Cal gets over the hump?
You know, they should. He has a team that I really like. If I had to guess, again, he will suffocate his players, and so therefore they won't do what they need to do. He overcoaches and all that stuff. I don't think he's Jimbo Fisher like you wanted to go down that road yesterday. Somebody was comparing, you know, are they both the same coach? Yeah. One national title and then a bunch of meh. I will give Cal credit. He took UMass to the Final Four.
True.
Okay, he took Memphis to the Final Four. That is not easy to do. And whether or not they were vacated later, which I don't really agree with.
I don't count those.
Yeah. Well, I did.
I'm saying I don't. Vacation is dumb. I don't count vacation okay. is my point.
Yeah,
Is
Cal a good coach? Yes. Has he lost his mind a little bit? Yes. Does he like to get in the way of his players? Absolutely. You got to let your players play, especially on the offensive end. I like their pieces, but Bama is without a doubt the toast of the town. They're now a basketball school. You know, Saban's lost his fastball. Alabama is now a basketball school. They're 20-3, and Tennessee's 19-4. A&M salty as you know what, and Auburn can still play, and Kentucky can play. We've got five talented teams in the league who could really do some damage in March Madness.
Absolutely.
Bama, Tennessee, A&M, Auburn, Kentucky.
Just hard not to go with the field when the field consists of all the great fundamentally sound basketball schools.
When you pull a Northeast school or a school from the Northeast or Midwest,
yeah,
I get it. There's all kinds of mid-majors that are phenomenal they bleed the clock, they understand spacing, keep the ball away from you, hit enough three-pointers, and beat you. It happens every year on the first weekend of the tournament. Now, I will say this, Jerry, real quick, this is a big name because of NBA and he played at North Carolina. Jerry Stackhouse is doing things to keep his job.
Yeah.
So
beat Ole Miss.
Be interesting to see if Stackhouse, usually Vandy errs on the side of not making a move. It looks like, and I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that I like some of their pieces. It looks like Stack is trying to get over the hump, do enough to maybe extend his stay in Nashville. No reason why Vanderbilt shouldn't win with a guy like that, who's got such a big name, and in a major metropolitan area where kids want to go there, because there's a ton to do within the town, both NFL and NHL. And there's been rumors for a while, Blake, that they're going to land an MLB team at some point. And there's just there's 10,000 people a day moving into the Nashville metro area. And the question would be, you know, could they tap into position themselves with an MLB team? And we'll see how that looks going forward. But Jerry Stackhouse, North Carolina, played under Dean Smith. He was part of that last run of Rasheed Wallace and Jerry Stackhouse played together at the same time at North Carolina.
That's crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. And went on, you know, Stack played for like a million years in the NBA.
Yeah. And dresses better than every coach in the league.
Oh, he dresses so good.
Oh.
Looks great.
Fresh.
Plus, he's got the build.
Kind of like Jay Wright.
Look, I ran into Jerry Rice in 2014 when Mississippi State went to number one at the guest room. And that guy looked like 5 million. And he looked like he could play. He looked like he was running a $3 billion hedge fund.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'd like to look
he's
like
got
that.
And he's got that million-dollar smile, too. So he was staying at the
oh hell, what's the hotel? Chester.
Chester.
It may have been named. Yeah. It may be a different name now. He stayed there for like a month. I think he was taking care of one of his parents, but he stayed there for like a month or a month and a half during football season. I think they let him work out at the. I think Dan let him work out.
Well, that would be
at
dumb if
facility.
You did. Yeah, if you didn't, that'd that be would
Dan
be stupid. Mullen. Yeah,
yeah.
I met Jerry Rice in Madden, Mississippi.
You
in
told
high school.
Me, yeah.
Yeah. And Warren Moon.
I love Warren Moon. We've had him on the show. Warren Moon, one of the most underrated quarterbacks of all time. Wow, much better than a lot of the quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls. Light years, actually. Brad Edwards on the Farm Bureau Insurance guest line. Coming up next, what's happening in Alabama? As Saban is now chasing Kirby Smart. Roll Tide, baby. Brad Edwards coming up next.
This is the SEC Insider Hit, presented by your local Farm Bureau Insurance agent. Go local. Go with a home team.
Oh, man. Crazy things happening in Tuscaloosa. Good morning. Welcome in. We are the Out of Bounds Show. ESPN 105.9 the Zone. Love the feedback on what you guys are, what y'all are going to cook for the Super Bowl. And with, you know, high of 60 and sunny, fire up the grill or the smoker early in the morning to get ready for that 5:30 kickoff. We've had a couple of people invite Blake and I to Super Bowl parties, so that's cool too. I may have to hit one pregame. Once the game kicks off, I got to be at the house. That may make me lame, but it is what it is. Out of Bounds is brought to you by Farm Bureau Insurance. And our next guest, Brad Edwards, 25 years at ESPN, University of Alabama Crimson Tide alum. He joins us on the Farm Bureau Insurance guest line. Brad Edwards, good morning. How you been, buddy?
Oh, I've been pretty well. Survived the Arctic blast over the weekend. We had a Saturday morning. I know it's been cold down there, too, but Saturday morning, we had temps below zero with wind chill in the minus 30s.
Good.
Which is, you know, bad enough if you don't have to go outside. In this case, I have a dog that is taking some medication that makes him drink a lot of water. So he's constantly having to go out and relieve himself. And, yeah, I mean, just time after time, I had to keep going out, standing there, watching him do his thing, and then just, come on, man, get back inside, get back inside. But, yeah, I mean, it's a different world when you start to get it. And I mean, you think about not that they've played a whole lot of football games and weather quite that bad, but you have a better appreciation for it. I'll say this. The coldest show that I ever went to all my years doing College Game Day on ESPN Radio, the coldest show that we ever had was, you may remember a while back, Northwestern and Illinois played a game at Wrigley Field. You know, yes. It was a really unique thing, so we went there for that. And neither team was very good, but it was just because it was cool. They're playing in a, you know, just legendary baseball stadium. And it was in November, and it was freezing. And it was just one of those where you just can't even feel your feet. You can't move your fingers and your cheeks are frozen. It's hard to talk, like one of those type things. And it certainly didn't give me more of an appreciation for Big Ten football, but it gave me more of an appreciation for Big Ten football fans, right? Like just the fans, and to see them on TV now in some of those games and it's packed student section. It's like you don't realize what it takes. And that's dedication to your team to be out there. The teams might not be that good, but the fans are dedicated.
Out of Bounds, ESPN 105.9 The Zone, Brad Edwards, 25 years at ESPN. Who was with you on the show at that time when you were freezing at Wrigley?
That was probably Ryan Russillo as the host. Trevor Maddich was the other analyst with me for every year I was on the show.
Right.
So only the host changed. I think that was back when it was Russillo.
And where were y'all set up at Wrigley?
Like across the street from, I mean, it was kind of, I would say we were across the street from like the third baseline, whatever, like, I guess the Cubs probably have the third base dugout. I'm assuming that's their, you know, home, it's usually the home dugout. So we're kind of like across the street from where the Cubs dugout would have been.
Okay. Wow.
And that your side of the stadium.
Your show was like, I mean, it was a marathon. It was like 6 hours on Saturday, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. We had a 7-hour show. And we had to get there like 2 hours before the show started. Oh, so, I mean, hey, look, our crew was there long before we were. And they were there long after us taking everything down. So I have a lot more sympathy. Not to mention, look, they try to help us out, you know, by putting some kind of heaters up there and giving us these little hand warmers to put in our pockets and stuff. And those guys didn't have all that stuff. So,
right.
I mean, if there's anyone that deserves a raise for being out there, it wasn't us, it was them.
So do you remember a hot one like down here, maybe in Baton Rouge or Gainesville, where y'all pulled like a second or third week of the season and it was, you know,
so 90. The hottest one would have been in Dallas or Arlington. Remember when LSU and Oregon opened the season at Jerry World? And I think it was the 2011 season when LSU just dominated like all the way up until losing the national championship game to Alabama. But I believe that's which season that was. It was a scorcher, as it often is in the DFW area, first weekend of September. And I remember that was one where TV game day was in the same location, and they were having to put like tubes of like from the air conditioner up the backs of the chairs of the guys on the set. Wow. in order to try to keep them cool during the show. I mean, fortunately on radio, like you can just kind of walk around a little bit while you're doing it. And I mean, your radio show, you're always on camera. But for us, like, you know, I could say something and then, okay, Trevor starts talking. And I know Trevor's going to talk for about a minute. So I'll go walk over and I'll go, you know, grab a drink out of the cooler, come back.
Sure.
And you could do that stuff on radio. You can't do it on TV.
Unbelievable. Wrigley, coldest. And the hottest was Dallas, Fort Worth, and Arlington for LSU and Oregon. Brad Edwards on the Out of Bounds show and the Farm Bureau Insurance guest line. All right, so Bama's been in a meltdown mode for a while. And I just want to be honest, there's a lot of teams in the SEC fans that have been enjoying some of this. I'm in constant communication with Ryan Fowler, who has a show in Tuscaloosa. And so now we've gone back-to-back years. Bama didn't even make it this year, Brad. And now they're the hunter instead of the hunted, because Kirby Smart has leapfrogged Bama right now, and they are the program in college football. And what do you hear from your Alabama colleagues, alums, and so on about where this is headed?
Yeah, I don't know that I hear anything that, you know, would be surprising or, you know, out of the ordinary. Obviously, this is the first time during this Saban run that there's no doubt that someone has passed Alabama. You had the time where Clemson won two national titles in the 3-year span, but Alabama won the one in between the two that Clemson won, and they also won the one before Clemson started, and then they won again before Clemson ever won again. So, I mean, there were people at a certain point that were trying to make an argument that, you know, maybe Clemson has passed Alabama or at least caught them. But in this case, when you win two in a row, then there's no question that you are now the team to beat, and Georgia is. And so Alabama, like you said, they are the hunters. They're not the hunted. Georgia is the hunted in the SEC. And nationally. Now, I mean, to keep it in perspective, you know, Alabama still finished number two and number five in those two seasons, and it's not like they fell off a cliff. But you're looking at a lot of unknown going into the season, because it's not just that, okay, now they're, you know, clearly the number two team in the SEC. But on top of it, they are replacing both coordinators. They are replacing their starting quarterback. And where do they go from here? I don't know, but it's one of those that you feel like if this were to result in another season that they didn't reach the college football playoff or they don't win the SEC, you know, then I think the people who want to declare the dynasty over really have a lot of ammunition. At this point, look, the best argument you have is simply that Saban's getting older. You know, I mean, because the results on the field have, while it's shown that Alabama is not at the level of Georgia, it's not like the rest of the country has caught up to Alabama. So I think you got to go one more. Look, and the other thing about it is that since Saban got there, they have never gone more than 2 years in a row without winning the national title, and that's right. Where they are right now, two in a row. They 2 years in a row they didn't win it, but there hasn't yet been three straight years without winning it. And so if they don't do it here, then you can say, okay, this is new ground. This is the longest drought that they've had, and we'll see where it goes. But at this point, you know, for all those who've been hoping for the end of this thing for about 10 years. This is the first time you're finally starting to see just a little twinkle of light at the end of that tunnel.
And Brad, he took advantage, and there's nothing wrong with this, over 12 years, about 12 years. Saban took advantage of Tennessee, Florida, Auburn, and LSU going through a lot of dysfunction with coaches and so on. And while Georgia was good, they weren't ever going to get over the hump and really be what they are under Smart with Mark Richt. So now all of a sudden you flip this, Brad Edwards, and you have Heupel operating at a pretty darn high level at Tennessee. You have Smart, who's running the number one program in the country now. You have Hugh Freeze at Auburn. I fully expect them to win and win big. They're not going to win like Bama and Georgia every year, but I don't put it past Freeze to have good teams every 3 years. And I don't think he'll fall apart at 5-7 or anything. And LSU's got Brian Kelly, who I think they are operating at a very high level under him, much more than Miles Ogeron. And we'll see what Florida does. Do you agree with that? That, you know, that 12-year window, and Saban took advantage of it and tip of the cap, but it is totally different today with what I just referenced?
Yeah, I think there is a difference as far as the quality depth of coaching in the SEC and guys who are proven, you know, to have had success at a very high level. That's the difference. Now, during this run that Saban has had, it's not like the SEC has been bad. Like you pointed out, they've been inconsistent, you know, because during this run, you've had other schools in the SEC that have won national championships. And I would, you know, throw on top of that the 2019 LSU team, and it's funny, like there was a lot of conversation right after the national championship game this year about, was this Georgia team the greatest one ever? I don't think they were as good as the previous year's Georgia team. I thought the 2021 team with the dominant defense was actually a little bit better. But people go off, you know, it's a recency bias. They're going off of the score of the national championship game. They forget they were one play away from losing in the semifinal. But regardless, those were two great teams that Georgia had the last 2 years. So three of the last 4 years, well, I'll say 4 years in a row, 4 years in a row, the national champion has been a team from the SEC that was a great team, not just the one that happened to come out on top, but a great team when you look at all of the metrics. And only one of the four was an Alabama team. So it's not like they haven't had to contend with other great teams in the SEC over that span, but there wasn't a consistency, like you say. You know, LSU was, for a lot of that time, just a quarterback shy of being that monumental threat to Alabama's dynasty. But they until Joe Burrow, they didn't ever have that guy. And I agree with you that I think Brian Kelly is the best coach in college football who has not yet won a national title at the FBS level. And look, if Les Miles and Coach O can win a national title at LSU, there's no reason that Brian Kelly shouldn't have a few very good chances before he's done. And, yeah, I mean, all of this, it's just, you know what it is if you look at okay, Georgia's 2023 schedule, and I'm sure you've looked at it.
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to find a game on there. Like, if Tennessee doesn't drop off too much, if Tennessee doesn't drop off too much, maybe there's a chance they could get knocked off in Knoxville. But that's pretty much it. Like, and Alabama used to have schedules like that where you'd look at it beforehand. Okay, like, you know what? There's one game right here that maybe they could lose, but they're just that much better than everyone else. And that's no longer the case, you know, where they're going to be three or four games on the Alabama schedule. Now, look, I mean, most teams in the country probably have 8 or 9 games they could possibly lose. But Alabama, rather than 1 or 2, we're now going up to 3 or 4 games that they could possibly lose each season. And that just makes it more difficult. But I will also add, that's where the 12-team playoff becomes Alabama's friend.
No doubt.
And I would also add to the friend of Georgia and the friend of Ohio State, any of the teams that have that elite talent, now you have a little bit of a mulligan. It's not just that you could, for the most part, could always afford one loss. Now you can probably afford to lose two. Mm-hmm. And so we got one more year that you can't get away with losing two. But, you know, last year's Alabama team lost 2 games on the final play, and they would have comfortably been in the 12-team playoff.
Absolutely.
And, you know, would have had a really good seeding. So as much as it may seem like, okay, now it's kind of time to panic, no, I think that the 12-team playoff, you know, is going to offer a little bit of relief to the situation.
He is Brad Edwards on the Out of Bounds Show, ESPN 105.9 The Zone, 25 years at ESPN. We're talking Alabama, where they are, where they're going. Both Bama and Georgia will have new quarterbacks. And so that will be interesting to see who can do it and be in the right spot. I agree with Brad on Georgia's schedule and on Bama's schedule. It's hard to see a loss on Bama's schedule because they host LSU and they host Tennessee. They're 2 road games that Brad referenced that they lost at the very end of the game. They lost on the road, which goes to show that they were not very, very far off. What did you make of, I don't know if it's public humiliation, but you know, Ryan Grubb, I don't want to get too bogged down because I know you're in real estate now, but Ryan Grubb, OC at Washington.
Yeah.
You know, it was a public deal where he went, he visited, he said no. Evidently, according to AL.com, there were feelers put out to Joe Moorhead. He wanted to stay as a head coach. Eventually, Saban lands on Tommy Rees. But that's usually not what happens to Bama, much less Saban, for something right. like that to be played out in the press and media, Brad.
Well, and I would say it happened with both offensive and defensive coordinators. Neither hire, as you know, Kevin Steele. I don't know if he's officially been announced, but all the reports are that Kevin Steele will be the defensive coordinator. That neither one of those feels like it was anywhere close to Saban's first choice. Now, you know, is that? Does that mean it's a disaster? Not necessarily, but I'll say this. Like, well, you mentioned Grubb. Grubb's offense or the way that his offenses have been schemed, I guess is kind of the best way to say it. His scheme, his philosophy is very different from Tommy Rees. And now, granted, to some degree, Tommy Rees has always been limited by Notre Dame's personnel, and they had better tight ends and wide outs and, you know, and so they were going to be a more traditional style attack because of that, because if you're playing to your strengths, if you're smart, you're going to play to your strengths, and that's kind of what you're stuck with. So maybe it's unfair to completely judge Tommy Rees on that. And a lot of Alabama fans right now are kind of justifying, okay, this is what Saban's doing. It's like he looked at Georgia and look, I listened to Saban on the set at halftime of the national championship game. And even a little bit pregame, just talking about what Georgia does with its tight ends and how difficult it is to stop. And I get it. I get like why he would say, hey, you know, maybe we need to go back to that style of play. But the fact that he appeared to want Grubb doesn't necessarily suggest that was his number one objective. This is pretty much known, is that whenever he hires a coordinator, that coordinator doesn't come in and install his own system.
Right.
Like he adapts to Saban's philosophy and what Saban wants to do. So it's not like, you know, the difference in coordinator would have made a huge difference in how the Alabama offense would look, but it would have made some difference. And so you look at both of those hires, and yeah, it does feel like, to a degree, maybe he was settling for a, you know, third option or something like that. And I don't know all the ins and outs of it and who was offered and who wasn't. But neither one seems to be the one that he wanted. Now, on the defensive side, the rumor has been that he really wants Jeremy Pruitt.
Right.
The problem is Pruitt is, you know, is a target of the NCAA investigation at Tennessee right now. And you just can't hire. He's not hireable as a, you know, as an on the field coach at this point because of that. And so the rumor was that a lot of these other guys that Saban was going after were worried that, hey, I'm going to take the job, and then as soon as the NCAA clears Pruitt, now I'm going to be replaced, you know, because that's the guy he wants. So whether that played into it, I have no idea. But you're right. I mean, it certainly felt like for the first time, Saban was not able to get the, you know, the coordinator that he wanted on either side of the ball, at least his number one option. And it's even more curious when you consider it coming off of one of the great signing classes of all time. So it's not like there's evidence that their talent level is dropping. You would think, I mean, what coordinator wouldn't want to come in and, you know, work with talent that's as good as you're going to find anywhere. But
here's what I think it is, Brad. I think it's, and you may disagree, we got about 2.5 minutes here real quick. I think it's the word is out about the schedule and lack of quality of life, and guys can get paid at every bit of 40 programs around the country. And if they do well, they can parlay that into a head coaching job. You don't have to go through Tuscaloosa like I think we thought you did 12 years ago or whatever. And they don't have autonomy, like you just said. And more coordinators are asking for either all or as much autonomy as they can get. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I can see that. If you want to show, you know, what you can do, it's a lot easier to display your own system and your own scheme somewhere else where you're given full control. But at the same time, I mean, his coordinators have a pretty good track record of getting head coaching jobs
sure.
elsewhere. And now the two most recent ones, you know, felt like, I mean, with, you know, Golding, I mean, look, it defensive coordinator at Ole Miss is a good job, but it's not Alabama. That was a step down for Golding. But, you know, for O'Brien going to offensive coordinator of the Patriots, I mean, yeah, he's gone to the NFL, back to the NFL, and it's a step up to some degree, but at the same time, it wasn't really a promotion. He just went from, you know, he went back to one other guy he used to work for. And so this is kind of the first time in a while that, you know, that guys who were with Saban for two seasons or more that you know, neither one of them ended up getting a big career break out of it. And so maybe that is something that was considered by some of those guys too. I don't know.
Yeah. Brad Edwards, 25 years at ESPN, joining us on the Out of Bounds show, the state of the state for the Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll see where it goes in 2023. Great to hear from you. Thanks for your time today. Hope everything's going well. How's the podcast?
Well, I mean, at the end of the season, there's nothing now. So we're shut down, and you know, whether I'll do something again next year remains to be seen. But at the moment, it's just off season. So yeah. Like you said, it's real estate.
Did you enjoy doing it?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to be able to just kind of stay involved and, you know, be able to talk about it every now and then and just kind of get into it. It's a hard thing to kind of let go of, but I'm fine with doing something else full time and just kind of having college football as a hobby now.
Brad Edwards on the Out of Bounds show. Good to hear from you, bud. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
25 years at ESPN. He joined us on the Farm Bureau Insurance guest line. Lunch today brought to you by Bulldog Burger in Ridgeland, Lake Harbor. In Ridgeland, Bulldog Burger in Starkville, and Bulldog Burger in Tupelo. We're live in the Bank Plus studio. The show is also brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Mississippi. It's good to be Blue, the official healthcare provider of the Out of Bounds show. Blue Cross, Blue Shield of Mississippi. Straight ahead, more Super Bowl Nuggets.